October 25th, 2012, Vrindavan, India, Nectar Devotion, Chapter 12, Part 2. The main thing that I want to do today with Panchanga Bhakti, because we're going to be spending all tomorrow morning on that, and we're going to be working on some personal plans for how we can improve our practice of Panchanga Bhakti. But I just want to look at the way that it's titled. Because often we think of Panchanga Bhakti as just, you know, worshipping the deity, being in the holy dham, serving the devotees, reading the scripture, chanting the holy name. But if we look at how it's titled, serving the deity with great devotion. So it's not just serving the deity. It's not just serving the deity, but it's serving the deity with a certain mood, with devotion, with affection. That here's actually Krishna. And it's not just reading Shastra, but reciting, especially Srimad Bhagavatam, amongst devotees. So, of course, it's also wonderful to read Shastra on our own, but there's a special relishing amongst the devotees. Prabhupada talks about bringing the fruit down with the tree. That associating with advanced devotees, particularly the way it's explained. Is associating with the devotees who have a similar mentality. Or persons who are more advanced than you, not just associating with devotees. And we can say associating with devotees means not just I hang out with the devotees to buy some ice cream.
Similar mentality means?
What does similar mentality mean? Somebody explain.
Same barn.
Same barn.
Same age.
Well, that's interesting.
You can really. If the devotee has a special love and feeling, so the same group with Kaili, Vatsalya, Sakya.
Yes, so that's of course for the more advanced devotees that you associate with persons who have your same rasa.
Persons you can relate.
Persons you can relate to. I like what's interesting what you said about same varna. And same age, although that's not specifically what's referred to here, but that's also sometimes useful to be with people who have a similar service. Just like in London, they have a Brahmachari convention. And we had a little Sangha in Radhadesh of the Vanaprastha ladies. So that also can be helpful.
It's in the same class.
Yeah, people who have. Second, third, and yeah. That can also be devotees who have some same level of realization.
That's what said the other classes.
Yeah. On a material level, I had an interesting experience doing service for Bhaktivinoda College in Radhadesh, that in order to get accredited, the Bhaktivinoda College in Hungary is accredited on its own, but in Radhadesh we're accredited through an outside university, through Chester. So we had to go to Chester to prove to them that we were actually worthy of being accredited. And we were working on accreditation of our education degree. We already have a theology degree, but we were getting our education degree accredited. And so all the people in Chester we were working with were all educational professionals. They were academic educational professionals. And when I went there, it was so nice to be with other academic educational professionals. My whole vocabulary changed. My whole way of thinking changed. You know, I can't talk like that with most people. They won't know what in the world I'm talking about. If I say, "Well, you should use the higher levels of Bloom's taxonomy and put them in your matrix with, you know, the higher levels of Gardner's intelligence and apply it according to Piaget's stages of child development, and that way you can really have an assessment program," you'll just look at me and go, "Huh?" You know, and I don't have very many devotees that I can talk to about these aspects of my service. There just aren't a lot of other educational professionals in the Hare Krishna movement. So it was so interesting when I went there, and I was like, wow, it is so nice to be with people that I can talk to, that understand me. We can talk about the same thing, we're on the same wavelength. So of course that's material, but Prabhupada compares being with devotees to being in the stock exchange. If you want to do a business, he said, then you associate with people who are in your same business. So in the higher levels of bhakti, if you want to, if you're in Vatsalya Ras, or you're in Dasya Ras, or you're in Madhurya Ras, you associate with people in the same mood, and then you can nourish each other's mood, because the moods are quite different. The way that the parental rasa devotees see Krishna and the way the conjugal rasa devotees see Krishna is quite different. You know, it's not... How do you say? It's, you know, they're in all the same village and all interacting with each other, but still it's quite different. You know, you don't talk with your elders about your romantic attractions. So it's different moods. So that's there. And then also sometimes to associate with devotees who have similar services. You know, we do this kind of thing. People get together to learn, the pujaris get together to learn more about deity worship, the book distributors get together to learn more about book distribution. And it's very difficult to go on even in your service without ever being with people who are in the same mood. You know, I work in education, and one of the things I notice is that the educators hardly ever associate with each other. So this is one of the things I really push for. You know, I was just recently in Mayapur, and I was giving class. I was invited by the international school to give training, and I said, invite the other schools. You know, so we invited the national school, and we invited the boys' gurukul, and we invited the adult education program. It was the first time that they'd all gotten training together. And we were going to the different schools to learn from each other. So just like we have our temple president's meeting and our GBC meeting, and now they have, you know, regular times when those who are gurus get together. So although that's not the main focus here, we can still think of it like that. We need people to enliven us, people who do have the same, you know, other renunciates, or just like I've heard from devotees who live in communities where practically everyone is a householder, they say it's very hard to be a renunciate there. And, you know, it can be the opposite. If you're the only householder in a community where it's all brahmacharis, again, it can be very difficult. I recently had one sannyasi guru write me and saying, you know, this is a brahmachari temple, but there's now a grahastha couple with a child. They want to live and work, you know, for the temple. How can I encourage it? What kind of standards should we have for this couple? What should they be expected to follow in the temple program? And he asked me about the mother. Should she bring her child to the morning program? And I said, well, one thing is if she's the only woman, and if she's the only, or the only person with a child, she's going to feel very lonely. You know, if she's a woman with a child, then everyone else is a brahmachari. And you expect her to come to the temple every day, instead of feeling happy, she's going to feel isolated. So she's going to need some way to bring her into the community. But here the emphasis is, and of course this also applies materially, or I wouldn't say materially, but to the other aspects of our life. And who is Rupa Goswami quoting? I love this. Who's Rupa Goswami quoting as to the value of association? Yeah, but who's he quoting here? Hiranyakashipu. According to Hiranyakashipu, so he's been quoted here, because one can find gold even in a filthy place. Even if it's a demon, if he says something true, you can accept. Gold can be taken, let's say it. A qualified girl can be taken from a poor family, right? Gold can be taken from a filthy place, etc. A low-class person if he has actual knowledge. So Hiranyakashipu says that, what? He says that our heart is like a crystal stone, that we reflect whatever we're around. If you want to change yourself, change your association. One devotee friend of mine said, the way I keep my wife happy is I make sure that all of her lady friends live at our standard or lower. So my wife will not want to compete with her lady friends who have more money.
How did you do that?
I don't know. You told me that was... They have one of the happiest marriages I've ever seen, by the way, that couple. That's lovely. Lovely couple. They're both originally from, they're from a long line of Brahmin families. He's from the Madhva Sampradaya, from the Sampradaya she's from. And they worship Shalabram in their house. Just wonderful, wonderful place. Exceptional ashrams. But anyway, he told me that. Because I was asking, how do you have such a happy marriage? He says, I make sure that all of my wife's friends live at the standard that I want to maintain or lower. So she won't ask me for things that I can't afford. But there's a principle that we change according to who we associate with. Our desires change. One of my friends just recently sent me an article that if one of your friends gets divorced, you're more likely to get divorced. That a divorce is contagious, like a disease. You know, this one man was telling the story that his daughter got divorced, and after his daughter got divorced, then his wife wanted to divorce him. And then his other daughter got divorced. And he said, I thought I had a happy marriage. So, you know, it's whatever people are doing, it becomes the system. So if you're with people who are really devoted to their japa and really finding taste in their japa, if you're devoted, if you're friends with people who really honor prasadam and review the scriptures and really relish Krishna consciousness, then it's more likely that you will too. And if you hang out with people that are always criticizing everybody and blaspheming everybody and, you know, all they ever see is the, what Prabhupada said, the drain cleaners report, you know, if they're literally cleaning the bathrooms in ISKCON is very nice, but figuratively cleaning the bathrooms in ISKCON is not very nice. Do you understand what I mean? Do you understand? If you're actually going to the physical toilets and cleaning them, that's very nice. But if you're cleaning out the political toilets, that's not very nice. So if you associate with people like that, then you'll also become critical and bitter. If you associate with people who are, you know, just going to the movies and buying the chocolate bars, and then eventually you'll do that also. So we should see that we're like a crystal stone. It doesn't mean we should have contempt for anybody. It doesn't mean we should say, well, I'm better than you, so I won't associate with you. But rather, out of humility and honesty, I want to choose association that will help me. And later on, we'll read Nectar Devotion, how one can experience shadow bhava by being in the presence of an exalted devotee. And that can turn into real bhava very easily. Okay. And chanting the holy name and living in Mathura. So again, I'm gonna go over those more. I'm gonna combine what's in this chapter with what we have tomorrow. So I do want to do a little exercise. This exercise that I have on the board, I'll do for tomorrow. What you can think about for tomorrow, actually, what you can plan tomorrow is, instead of or in addition to a question, if you can think about one of these five potent items of bhakti, at least one. If you want to pick more than one, that's fine, but I'd like to focus on one, where you would like to really improve. So improving in your japa, improving in your kirtan, improving in your devotee association, improving in your living in a holy place, improving in your worship of the deity, or improving in your reading Bhagavatam and Shastra. And if you can come tomorrow with just like one sentence, and you're not going to give this to anyone else, it's just going to be for yourself. And we're going to work together on a plan. These are the elements of a plan, of how you make a plan that will actually happen. We're going to be talking about how each of us is going to work on our own plan, and we're going to work on it in such a way that you've got a 99% chance that it will happen.
Wow.
Yes.
And devotional service?
No, making money on the stock market. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that. Yes, and devotion. This is all about devotional service. I give some material examples, Prabhu, but this is all about devotional service. I hope it's about devotional service. If it's not, I need to get fired and get another job. All right. Yes, not only in devotional service, but in one of the Panchanga Bhakti. So there are 64 items, but I want you to pick one of the five. No, don't pick one of the other ones. Don't pick offering dandavads and don't pick offering incense. I mean, that's nice too, But I want, because we're studying today and tomorrow Panchanga Bhakti, so I want to be in that. I mean, you can use what I'm going to teach you tomorrow to make plans and other things too. That's fine. You know, hopefully you can use it the rest of your life to make plans. And this is one part of it. There's going to be several things we're going to be going over, assisted by Bhakti and Thakur also. And then several systems to have, make plans that actually happen, that actually work for you, to improve your bhakti. So that's what we'll be focused. But come with something you want to do, because I don't want to just say, okay, what would you like to improve? And you're like, I don't know. So if you can think about that, and maybe as you're reading, you know, as you're reading chapter 13, and you can even, if you want, these are such short chapters, right? It's not a burden to read these chapters.
Yeah, sure.
Very true. So if you want to, you can also look over the Panchanga Bhakti section from today's chapter and really see, you know, what aspect kind of jumps out at you and you say, well, I'd really like to do this. And I'm going to do this too. I never do this with anybody. I do this as well. I'm going to do something else today, Krishna, really, if I can get through all this. Okay, so let's look at our questions. So we have some old ones we didn't do here. How to fully surrender to Krishna. So all we can do is fully surrender to Krishna where we are right now, and when you do that, you get such happiness and freedom that you want to surrender more, and then you want to surrender more, and then you want to surrender more. And associate with people who are surrendered to Krishna and see how happy they are. One of the main, for me, one of the main things that helps me surrender more is when I look at people who are much more surrendered than I am, and I see how happy they are. I see that they're not suffering any of the terrible things that I'm afraid will happen to me if I surrender to Krishna. Yes? The
Maharaj was asked by one devotee, how can I become... I think the question was, how can I become a monk like you? Jagat Maharaj said, just you renounce suffering.
You renounce suffering. Cool.
Brilliant.
Yes. Very cool. Very succinct. The key is, and it's in this chapter today, where, and I was reading this an electronic device, I will not be able to find it again in the book, where Prabhupada says, if you don't want to clear the heart, if you want things to remain as they are, but it's in this chapter. Oh, here it is. It's at the bottom of 107. If the dust of the heart is cleansed away, then one can actually understand the importance of the holy name. For persons who are not inclined to clean the dust in the hearts and who want to keep things as they are, it is not possible to derive the transcendental result of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. So when Mara says renounce suffering, what I see that means is all of our anarthas are things that we think are arches. That's why we have them. Because we like them. We want to keep them. We don't see them as suffering. Krishna says, Kam Ashrita, the demons take shelter of lust, and Ahankar Ashrita, they take shelter of Ahankar. So we have our attachments because we like them. They're not being forced on us by some other agent. It's not that I really want to be a devotee and Maya is forcing me to have material attachments. It's a bunch of nonsense. I have my material attachments because I want them. I like them. So I have to come to the point that I want to clear the dust from my heart. And part of that is what Prabhupada describes in Bhava, where the devotee sees the naked form of material desires. Basically, it's asking Krishna, please show me how my attachments are actually suffering. If you see that your so-called artas are actually unartas, then you'll immediately want to get rid of them. That means wanting to see the truth. It's a pretty simple thing, do I want to see the truth or not? So ask Krishna to show you the truth. I talked about this before. Then choose rightly, right? I talked about this here. Yes? Did I? I can't remember if I talked about here or the other class. Did I talk about that here? You get close to Krishna and he reveals? Yes? And then you have to choose? So ask Krishna to reveal. Gyanati Pain Bhashita, ask him to reveal and then choose the truth. And then it's so wonderful. You're just like, wow, that was wonderful. And then you'll ask Krishna to reveal the next thing. That's basically how you fully surrender. Eventually you fully surrender. What are the temptations to the devotees at all levels which draw them out of devotional service? This is nicely explained by Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manashiksha. So I would refer whoever asked this question to that. The various temptations. Of course, each of us, in one sense, we all have the same temptations. We want to be the lord of the material energy and lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. But they come in different forms for each of us. So exactly the flavor that tempts you is not going to tempt you. The flavor that tempts you is not going to tempt you, and so forth. So sometimes it's easy to think that I'm better than others because I wouldn't have their kind of difficulty. But I have my kind of difficulty. So like, you know, when there's these yogis, the demigods send some beautiful dancing girl. And each of us has our particular beautiful dancing girl, if you understand what I'm talking about. We each have something that for us is like a beautiful heavenly girl that we love. You know, we forget about Krishna. For some people it may be politics. They hear, you know, some political problem and then they forget about Krishna. For some people it may be, you know, ice cream. For some people it may be making a lot of money. For some people it may be having a lot of power. So exactly the form in which our temptation is different for different people, according to one's mentality. You know, the different varnas are attracted by different things. They're not all attracted by, like Kshatriya, real Kshatriya, they can renounce sense gratification. And they can renounce wealth. But what can't they renounce? What is a Kshatriya that doesn't want to ever give up? For their what? Pride. Their honor. Prestige. You know, that Jarasandha that Krishna said, you'll be glorified after your death. Who cares if you're glorified after your death? Stupid. You know, but the Kshatriyas are really into that. It really matters to them. I will give my head now and be glorified after death. And the Shudra doesn't care about that. The Shudra's like, give me money now. Give me, you know, good tasting food now. Who cares about after death? Whereas the Kshatriya, they're like, I'll give away all of my money if it will increase my reputation. And the Vaishya's like, give me money. Who cares about reputation? So each, you know, each person has something that is going to tempt us in particular. You can say general, but it's also quite individual. Okay, this one I didn't get to. How can one discriminate between a genuine source of hearing and a bogus source, especially in the beginning of spiritual life? Well, is the person coming in disciplic succession? Or are they just some self-proclaimed, you know, I went up to the mountain and meditated and I saw God and here's my story. Are they speaking from Sadhu Shastra Guru? I think I've emphasized that a lot in this class. And I'll emphasize it again. Are they speaking from Sadhu Shastra Guru? Are they speaking from Sadhu Shastra Guru? Are they speaking from Sadhu Shastra Guru? Can they back up what they're saying? Or are they just making it up? Oh, I heard in some village somewhere. I mean, I was looking at one, I don't know if I told you guys, I was looking in one handbook for ISKCON, and, you know, there was some rule there. It was like 10 devotees had put the handbook together, and I wrote to each of them, where did you get this rule from? Where's the source? Most of them didn't even answer me, and one of them answered me, oh, I found it in some Hindi book somewhere, with no Shastra reference. Did I tell you? So now I'm going to write a whole paper, because they're doing a second edition, and saying, please take this out of the book. Why do you have something there that's not from Sadhu Shastra Guru? I heard it somewhere. And it becomes, you know, an official ISKCON publication. This is what everybody has to do, but it's just made up. So, you know, and the other thing is, what is the person's life? So are they into civic succession? Can they give actually Sadhu Shastra Guru sources from what they're saying? And what's their life? Are they speaking from Shastra and then they go in the back and have a cigarette? And what's the effect on your life? From hearing from them, do you become inspired? Do you get realizations? Do you change your life? Or is it just some temporary entertainment and then, you know, like watching a movie or something and then you go back to your life? You know, what, is there any effect? So even a neophyte can tell that. Okay, if some senior devotee wants some favor from you and you are feeling, why is he getting this? I should help him whatever way I can. How can I get rid of this bad thing in the heart, which is coming from my bad nature? I'm not quite sure what this question means, but I think what it means is that you feel some envy of somebody senior. Why are they getting something that I'm not getting? I think that's what this question is. So this envy is very deep-rooted. Should I ask how many people here have ever felt envious? So, you know, it's very deep-rooted. And the likelihood is that we're going to experience envy. Why does that person have something that I don't have? Prabhupada talks about, you know, you had a childhood friend and you heard they became a high court judge and you say, him? Become a high court judge? Nah, not really. I saw him on the bench. Oh, then he can't be getting paid any salary. So that's our tendency. Why is that person getting something that I don't have? Well, it's a central envy towards Krishna. And then it comes out as envy towards other jivas. And what can we do about it? You know, until we give up our envy of Krishna, we're not going to give up all our envy of other jivas. And I say, what do we do about this? Is what we do with all of our anarchists. First of all, admit that you have it. You don't have to admit to the world, but you at least need to admit to yourself. I actually have this. I actually have envy. I'm not just some kind of, you know, pure. I have this envy. And then look at it. Because we have a tendency to think, oh, I don't want this envy. I don't want this envy. But if we didn't want the envy, we wouldn't have it. Krishna just doesn't pick some jivas and force envy on them. He doesn't just say, okay, count to, you know, one, two, one, two, one, two. Okay, all the twos, you get envy. You know, it's not like that. It's not like I'm just some innocent little lamb and Maya's just throwing envy at me. If I have envy, it's because I want to be envious. So look at all the narratives just like this. That's how you do with any nartha. You look at it and you say, oh, and you can only do this if you're chanting and reading nicely, by the way. You can't. This is not a material skill, just by the way. I couldn't teach this like to just materialistic psychology students. They wouldn't be able to do it. You've got to have some, because it's Krishna who does all this, really. You can't do this without connection with Krishna. It doesn't work. And then you look at it. You say, Krishna, show me. Krishna reveal, can he paint, show me the naked form of materialism. And Krishna will show you. It's what he's been, it's what he wants you to ask for. He'll show you. And what will you see? You'll see it's just suffering. What you'll see is, oh, it's not a shelter. It's suffering. And then you have to make the decision, I don't want this anymore. But you can't just start off with, I don't want this. Because that's a lie. Do you see the difference? If I just say, if I notice some envy in my heart, I go, no, I don't want to be envious. That's not true. So first you have to say, oh, okay, I'm envious. That's because I want to be envious. Why do I want to be envious? Krishna, show me. What is it in envy that I find attractive? Why am I taking shelter of envy? What do I think it will give me? What false promise am I listening to? Show me the naked form. Show me the true form. And he will. And then you can actually choose. That's what Krishna did to Arjuna. He showed this is the actual situation. Okay, now choose. And then if you say, okay, Krishna, I've actually seen it. I see what it is. And you'll grieve. There'll be some grief. Like you read, you know, the prayers of the great Vaishnavas where they have some grief. Oh, I'm sinful. It won't just be, oh yeah, I can carry it. It'll be some grief. I've been holding on to this thing. I don't want it anymore. Then Krishna takes it. Sunyatan Sokata Krishna Panishan. Rinyantasta Bhadrani Vijinati Surjita. He takes it away. But Krishna will only take away your attachments if you want them to be taken away, as Prabhupada says here. If you're not inclined to keep the dust in the heart and keep things as they are, it's not possible. So Krishna will not force. I know that there's a group of Vaishnavas who preach like that. They say, you know, Krishna will just force your inertness. No, he won't. That's not what Srila Prabhupada is saying. You have to want your inertness to be gone. Krishna will respect your free will. Now, sometimes Prabhupada will say you can ask Krishna to force you. But what that means is Krishna will put you in a situation where things will be extremely clear and it will be very, very difficult to make the wrong choice. But it's still possible to make the wrong choice. We gave the example the other day of Daksha, who said the Hamsaguya prayers. And you know it says in the Bhagavatam he was experiencing bhava. And he was seeing Vishnu face to face. And he still made the wrong choice. Free will is always there. Okay, I think I caught up with all but one that's very complicated and it would take a very long time, so I'll get to that sometime. I'm going to keep that time and get to it. Asking what are the benefits of living in the Holy Dhamma. So that's already given clearly. I think if you just read through this chapter and the next chapter, it gives a list of the benefits. Okay, yesterday I spoke about surrender. It mentioned the statement, Krishna, whatever you want to do with me, as surrendering to Krishna, almost like becoming his slave. How is a surrender related with surrender to Guru, becoming the Guru's slave? Yes and no. But the Guru isn't thinking, shouldn't be thinking, they're a Guru, that you're serving them. They're thinking that they're engaging in Krishna service. If surrender to the Guru means that the Guru is engaging in Krishna service, then it's the same thing. Two things equal to the same thing are equal to each other. It should be like that. When we say the disciple sees the Guru as sakshadaritvainasamastashastya, why? Because when you're serving the Guru, you're serving Krishna. If the Guru is taking the service for himself and putting your service in his own pocket, then it's not the same. So one has to see carefully. This is part of choosing a bona fide Guru. Is this a Guru where serving the Guru is serving Krishna? They're not taking it for themselves. Yes?
Sometimes two instructions of two gurus are contradicting.
Yeah, sometimes the instruction of one guru is contradicting to two different disciples also. Or to the same disciple at two different times. There's one devotee, Prabhupada said to him, you're eating too much, you need to reduce. And the devotee said, but Prabhupada, you told me to eat a lot. And Prabhupada said, did you believe me then? So believe me now. So just like when you're 20, the guru may say, you know, best to marry. When you're 50, the guru says, now get out of the marriage. Opposite instructions. Same person. Different times in your life, or different people. One person you may say, you should just live in Vrindavan. The Prabhupada told one devotee, live in Vrindavan, become a Vrijbhasi. Other devotees, he said, just stay 3 days and then leave. So it depends. Different people, different times in the same person's life, different circumstances.
Same instruction, actually. Surrender to Krishna.
Yeah, ultimately it's the same instruction. But the details of surrendering to Krishna are going to look different for different people at different times, because what we have to surrender and where we are is different. It's just like if you say, how do I get to India? Well, where are you starting from? The instructions are different. Are you in Pakistan? Are you in Kenya? Are you in Australia? Are you in Canada? Where are you? Do you have enough money for a plane ticket? Do you have to take a train? No. The instructions will be different.
That is like, is there only one way? Let's say if you have one guru, maybe Siksha or Diksha guru, and you are following, and is there only way to grow devotional service follow each and every instructions, or you have to introspect and see whether this is sometimes that. Yeah,
you can discuss.
Discuss. Okay.
Arjuna discussed, didn't he? Arjuna said, this instruction you're giving to me appears impractical. Where did he say that? What chapter?
Six.
Arjuna said, I can't follow these instructions. They're impractical. They're not going to work for me. He didn't just say yes, sir. Did Arjuna just say yes, sir? No. He discussed. He asked questions. That's one of the 64 Arjunas is asking questions. Now, he didn't say, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. It wasn't disrespectful. But he said, this isn't going to work for me. What happens if I fail? Right? And also Krishna, just like Krishna says, do this, you can't do this, do this, you can't do this, do this, you can't. So a guru will also do that. Should do that. This is what you should do. If you say, you know, guru, I can't do that, I'm not, then they should say, okay, do this. Sometimes the guru may say, I'm sorry, this is what you need to do. And then as long as it's a proper instruction, then you have to do it. Yes?
I got a quotation from somebody, some devotee said, if there is a, it is a little technique, if there is a dispute between Siksha Guru and Diksha Guru instructions, then follow Diksha Guru. And it was like, I feel this is like, I don't agree with it.
You know, generally, so Prabhupada talks about generally the Shiksha Guru is supporting the Diksha Guru, but that's not always true. It's very personal.
Yes, it depends on individual relationships.
Depends on individual relationships. You know, again, the line we listen in Bhagavad Gita is a Shiksha line, it's not a Diksha line. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a difference of opinion with his Diksha Guru, and he followed his Shiksha Guru. So, you know, I don't want to say everybody has to do exactly like that. Yes?
It also depends on the mentality of the disciple. Mm. Because sometimes, I'm not saying for anyone here, but, you know, one may want to avoid the instruction of the Diksha Guru and
go shopping.
Yeah, it can happen like that.
Oh, definitely it happens like that. Just like sometimes people, when they're deciding who's going to be their guru, instead of looking for someone they can put their faith in, they look for who's going to let them eat chocolate or something like that.
Give them a green card.
You know, who's going to give them a green card, yeah. So that's... Yeah, that can also be... You know, you go to your one guru and they say no, and then you go to your other guru and... children do that. It's the kind of thing little children do. They go to their daddy and they say, Daddy, can I have a candy? No. They go to Mommy, Mommy, can I have a candy? You know. What did your daddy say? He said no. So why are you asking me? Yeah, so one, you shouldn't be... It really depends. I mean, I have a number of friends where their primary relationship is with a Shiksha Guru. And not with a Diksha Guru. I mean, I have a number of friends like that. I have some friends who they have their relationship with their Diksha Guru is almost non-existent. They've never spoken to him. They've never had an email with him. He barely knows their name. He doesn't, and they have a very tight relationship with the Shiksha Guru. I mean, I was at an initiation. We'll just say this, where the Diksha Guru said, "Okay, I'm your Diksha Guru, but this person is your Shiksha Guru, and this person is the one who's guiding you." So that, you know, that there may be that kind of understanding also. Do everybody know some devotees like this who have this kind of?
Yeah.
If the AC turns off, we should have the window. We need some air with all these people breathing in this room, so it gets stuffy very quickly.
We get sick too.
Yes, we have to have something. But that is really very individual. You can't mandate and say it has to be like this. But it should always be with respect and not cheating and not shopping. That kind of thing. Okay, suggested to reside in Mathura or Vrindavan and in nectar of instruction. and nectar devotion. At the same time, it said the devotee shouldn't live in Vrindavan. So, in other words, for people who may commit offenses to the Dham, better to just have a brief visit. So, ideally, if you can live in the Dham with proper respect, then you can live in the Dham. But Srila Prabhupada did not so much encourage devotees to live, especially in Vrindavan. He encouraged people to visit. Some devotees, Prabhupada told them to live in the Dham. Some, he said, you live here in the comforts of Vasu.
I was reading somewhere that he said that retiring devotees could try it out and see how they go.
Yeah, well, Prabhupada actually wanted establishments in Vrindavan and in Mayapur, especially for vanaprastas. He said the vana you should live in is the Vrindavana, as a vanaprasta. Now, this is such a funny question. What is more favorable, to associate with more advanced but a bitter devotee, or with a less advanced but cheerful devotee? Okay, advancement doesn't mean how many years you've been hanging around in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness.
Yeah.
Oh, well, are you defining bitter like that? Prabhupada wrote a letter to Janarani. He said, if you're not joyful, you can't make any advancement. Advanced devotees should be joyful, generally. I mean, they make an angry at the demons or whatever. But Brahmabhutta Prasanatma. That doesn't mean they're always going to be walking around like this. If people are bitter and angry, and best to offer them obeisances from a distance. It's not just how many years, you know, advancement isn't just like that. I mean, we may show respect to people by their age or...
Sweets!
Yay! No. Sweets.
I'm 2 kg of box.
No, you don't get to tell him which sweets. He decides which. Confirmed. Okay. As far as residing in Dham, why Mathura is more stressed than Vrindavan when NOI states that Vrindavan is superior? Mathura includes Vrindavan. So when Rupa Goswami is saying live in Mathura, he doesn't mean live in the part of Mathura that doesn't include Vrindavan. He means that anywhere in Mathura Mandala, which includes Vrindavan and includes Govardhan and includes Radhika. How to memorize the items of devotion for the Bhakti Shastri exam? well, that's one of the reasons I had you do that. There was many, many reasons I had you all do that exercise with the mixed up list. But that was one of the reasons by playing with the lists like that, it would help you remember them. You can, you know, sort them into different categories, make up ideas with the letter and the words, and see what words go together and things like that. No, I'm not going to do that. Sometimes I feel Krishna reciprocates and I feel really nice that time, but after some time things become normal and that reciprocation doesn't have much value. How can I overcome this? Well, you can't force Krishna to reciprocate. First of all, he's a person. He can reciprocate when he wants to. Even he came to Narada Muni and he said, you're not going to see me again in this life. So Krishna's not a machine that if you just, you know, we have our little machines here. If I push this button, it does this. I push this button, it does this. Krishna's not like that. And if you treat the items of devotional service like that, Krishna won't reciprocate with you very often at all. If you think, well, if I just sit like this to chant, and I just then Krishna will come, you know. It doesn't work like that. So Krishna has many reasons why he reciprocates and many reasons why he runs away. Even the gopis ask this question, what to speak of others. So Krishna even ran away from the gopis. Let's think about this for a minute. Okay, so you're a sage in the Dandakaranya forest. Now, even to be a sage in the Dandakaranya forest, you've probably been a jnani or yogi or bhakti for a lot of lifetimes. And you're living for a long time, doing all these austerities in the Dandakaranya forest. And you see Lord Ram, and you fall in love with Lord Ram. And you want to marry Lord Ram, but you know you can't because he took this Ekapadipata and he's not going to marry you. And you're thinking, well, God, I'd really like to be with you, but can I be with you as Krishna? And Lord Ramachandra, you're just thinking this, and Lord Ramachandra doesn't answer you. He just smiles and is silent, and you can understand, okay, he's accepted my desire. Well, then you've got the rest of that life. And then you leave your body and you take birth in the womb of a gopi in Gokula Vrindavan. And you see Krishna, and you're just like, oh, I really want to be in love with Krishna. And you're experiencing purvaraga and separation from Krishna. And you're a little girl, and Krishna steals your clothes in the Jamuna and tells you he'll dance with you in the future. And you watch Krishna dancing on Kaliya, and you think, wow, he is so talented. Finally, after lifetimes and lifetimes of desire, finally, Krishna blows his flute and calls you. So you just run. You leave your japati on the stove, right? You leave your feeding your family, you just leave them. You're feeding yourself, you leave it, you just throw on some clothes. Young girls never just throw on clothes, they always make sure they're nice. You just throw on your clothes, you don't even notice if you're putting your sari upside down, and backwards and inside out, and you only put on one earring, and you put your bracelet on your waist, and your belt on your foot, and only one foot, and you're just running and running, and it's dark, and it's at night, and there's lions, and there's tigers, and there actually were lions and tigers. And you just run in the middle of the night, finally, after so many lifetimes. And you get there, and Krishna says, what are you doing here? I guess you just came to see the flowers at night. But now you're a respectable girl, go home. I'm not going home. I came to be with you. I wanted to be with you for so long. And Krishna says, okay. So then he's walking with you, and he's joking with you, and laughing, and just when you're at the point of absolute intensity, he leaves. Just walks away. It's gone. After all that, called you, sent you back home, told you to go back home. You didn't refuse to go back home. And he's just teasing you and playing with you, and then he leaves. Goodbye. Just leaves, it's gone. Now you're in the middle of the forest alone. So that's Krishna's play with the devotees. You know, when he finally came back, they weren't exactly very happy with him. But they didn't want to hurt his feelings, be angry with him. So they just said, we have a philosophical question. We were wondering about different kinds of lovers, and maybe you could give us some instruction. And Krishna says, actually, I wasn't far away. I was actually here, but I wanted to increase your love. So Krishna does that even with the highest levels. Although Krishna becomes the property of the devotee, and the devotee becomes the property of Krishna. You know, we talk about becoming Krishna's slave. Well, guess what? Krishna becomes the slave of the devotee, too. I was just telling you that yesterday, right? That I heard that in Prabhupada's lecture on the nectar devotion. He said that Krishna becomes your property. You don't have any material property. Krishna's your property. But that doesn't mean Krishna wants to be taken for granted. Even I don't want to be taken for granted. Any of you want to be taken for granted? So Krishna doesn't want to be taken for granted. So he comes and goes. He even does it with Radharani. Sometimes she waits for him all night. He shows up in the morning. And she said, where were you? And he makes up some story. That's what he does. Why does he do that? Because otherwise, there's no increase. Now, we're all looking for a loving relationship that's always going to increase. When people get married, you know, they're young, and they're madly in love, and they're hoping, when I'm 90 years old, I'll be more in love than I am now. But it generally doesn't work like that. Generally, our feelings decrease over time. But with Krishna, they increase. So they increase naturally because Krishna's expansive and wonderful, and they never reach a limit. You know, never like know Krishna. But they also increase because Krishna does these sort of reciprocations, that he comes and goes. And even when we get to a point that we see Krayanjana Chimita Bhakti Vilojanaya Santasadaya Vidhaya Shino Bhakti Yamshana Sundara Chimita Asukam, even when we get to a point, Sadaya, where it's constantly, still the devotee goes through meeting and separation, meeting and separation, meeting and separation. Still. In fact, you know, Mahaprabhu is teaching Vipalamba, he's teaching to be separation. So we shouldn't be surprised. You know, Krishna does become the property of the devotee, but not exactly like a machine or a pet dog or something. He's Swarat, he's independent. So he comes and goes. How to overcome that? Well, if we love Krishna, then we'll see him everywhere, even when we're separated from him. What is better for a practicing devotee? Staying in Vrindavan and studying to become confident, or go out and preach whatever he knows? That depends on you and your particular situation. So for some devotees, there may be staying, their service is to stay in Vrindavan. For other devotees, their service is to go out and preach. That may also change at different times in your life. One of my friends lived in Vrindavan for 20 years, and now she's, you know, out preaching in America. So that, you know, Srila Prabhupada stayed in Vrindavan for so long, and then he went out and preached. And then he would also sometimes come back to Vrindavan. So for some people, their service may be just stay here. Other people, make their service may be go out on the battlefield. Other people may be different. For that, you have to consult with Krishna in your heart and your spiritual master and the other Vaishnavas, and be honest with yourself. What is empowerment considering serving the Lord according to one's position? Oh, I love this question. But we'll take this tomorrow. And I'm also, so I'm going to do Krishna Rama. I'm going to do two exercises tomorrow. We'll focus on, first of all, making a plan for Panchanga Bhakti. So please come with an idea for that. And come with an idea based on your reading in the chapters. So read something in the chapter, when you read that and go, oh, that's something I'd really like to do, or that's something I'd really like to do more of, or that's something I'd really like to do better. And the other thing we're going to work on is an exercise I've done many, many times, and it's a really beautiful thing about this empowerment, serving Krishna according to our position, but getting empowered and doing something wonderful in Krishna's service. So we're going to do those two things tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow morning, we'll do both of them. So thank you very much. All grace to Srila Prabhupada, all grace to Swami, all grace to Srila Ramadan.